This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast, sponsored by Cards Accepted. I'm Elliot Jackson and I'm joined, as always, by George Smith. Hello, George, how are you?
I'm not bad, mate. Not...
For the second time this week. Three times in a week.
We're seeing a hell of a lot more of each other at the minute, aren't we? It's probably something to do with the fact that the season, well, the end of the season is getting rather interesting, and now we move on to arguably the best part. We've got, what, 5 games left, 1 final decision to be made. It feels like we're on that very, very final countdown now to getting it all done. And in a way, I'm kind of glad that the end is near. I think I'm ready for a break ahead of the Euros, which I'm very much looking forward to, only 5 weeks away now.
Yes, very excited for the playoffs. My favourite part of the season. Just absolutely fantastic. Those second leg, I don't think you can beat championship second leg playoff semi-finals. I think they're better than the finals. They are my favourite games to watch.
Under the lights as well.
It produces the best games.
And we've got nothing better.
2 cracking ties coming up. But before we get in, and this is in bulk a playoff preview podcast, before we get into that, there's been another managerial sacking in the championship, and one that has taken quite a lot of neutrals by surprise, not least us. George, Liam Rossini is no longer the head coach, manager, whatever his title was, at Hull City. 18 months in charge, and a pretty shock decision in all seriousness from Arjun Ilijai. Rossini took over the club 18 months ago when they were in 21st place, and then did his first full season in charge in 7th. Missing out on the playoffs by 3 points. The club's statement and interviews that the chairman has given since cited style of play as an issue and a lack of alignment on how to take the club forward, rather than simply, we did not finish in the playoff place, so let's move him on. Quite frankly, a ridiculous decision in both of our opinions, as I'm sure you'll come on to in a moment. But again, it goes back to comments I made about Liam Rossini, and I quote tweeted this yesterday when the news broke. There is no doubt that Liam Rossini has had huge backing, and no, he shouldn't have been nominated for manager of the season, but it doesn't work like that. Football does not work as a linear process. You don't get success overnight. You can't just chuck a load of money at it and a load of expensive players and expect to shoot up from 21st to the top 6 inside 18 months. Now, if style of play is the issue, I find that quite hard to believe, because, you know, it's very hard to say of what is good football, what is an attractive style of play. But broadly speaking, I think it's generally viewed that a possession style, possession-based attacking style of football is what is desired by a lot of the top clubs. And having a coach like Liam Rossini, who can clearly improve players and young players as well, again, very sought-after qualities. And Hull City behind probably Leicester in all those sort of metrics in terms of possession sequences, PPDA, which is pressing per defensive action, which is a metric to proxy how well a team presses and wins the ball back. Yes, there's a few older heads, but generally quite a young squad. To rip that up and then decide to start again, it feels like an erratic decision from an owner who has pumped a lot of money into Hull City and done a lot of things right, but for looking at his managerial appointments, he's 1-for-1 because he chucked Grant McCann out when he didn't deserve to be chucked out when he first took over, brought his own man in, which was Shota Abdelaziz. That was a disaster. They were 21st in the table when Rossini took over. And for me, it's one thing to get rid of Liam Rossini, but to give him a 3-year deal in December and then decide to move him on, I think, again, that's the scattergun approach that this feels like. It does not feel like a coherent plan and a well-thought-through strategy. You know, that is the biggest issue for me. I don't agree with the decision, but it's more so the reasoning behind it and the thought process. You know, it doesn't show a coherent line of thinking to give a manager a 3-year deal in December and then sack him if you're stating that this is not objective-driven and it's not because he didn't get in the playoffs and it's for more broader reasons. It just doesn't make much sense to me, George, and it's a bit of a concern. And feels like Hull City, whilst a lot of managers will apply for that job because they'd be well-backed and because, you know, it's a club that has got ambition, it does feel like a bit of a silver bullet as well.
I think I have to say I agree with all of that, to be quite honest. And it strikes me as being a case straight away as being a situation where the grass is not necessarily greener on the other side. I think it's a very, very strange decision from the Hull City owner to do this, because with all due respect, yes, Hull chucked a lot of money at it this season, and they did, certainly in terms of loan signings with the likes of Fabio Cavallio, Ryan Giles, Liam Delap, players like that. But Hull, were they really ever considered as genuine contenders for the playoffs? Not in my opinion. And seventh place, 3 points off, that's a pretty good effort, regardless of what quality you've got.
I think the only thing you could put directly to that point you've made is they were sixth on New Year's Day, and then they went on a run of 2 wins in 10, I think it was, and that really saw them fall away, drop as low as 10th, I think, at one point. And then they obviously picked up towards the back end of the season, went on a bit of a run, and just missed out.
They did, but I wouldn't necessarily at the start of the season have considered them as a team that I would have sort of in my mind sort of said they're going to be the ones that are going to be breaking, making a run for the top six.
Did we both have them 17th, I think?
I think we both have them quite low down.
Before the bulk of their summer business, and then, of course, obviously not knowing about the January business they were then investing.
It was a long way down the ladder, and I'm just bringing up our predictions now. I'd got them in 17th spot, and so had you, so well remembered. We both got them at the wrong end of the table. But no, I think obviously the big elephant in the room, if you like, about this situation is the fact that he was given that 3-year contract as recently as December. Surely at that point, the Hull City owner has got a clear sort of vision of what Liam Rossini's style of play is. And yes, the sand of the squad did improve in the January window with the likes of Carvalho coming in, Ryan Giles, players like that. But he's still got a sort of clear view of the way that Liam Rossini had liked to play his football. So I think, being honest, I don't think Hull at times were were particularly attractive to watch. I don't think they were brilliant on the occasions that I did see them during the season. There were flashes of quality, there's no doubt about that. And they had got some very good talent, Carvalho being the main man. Jose Antufan had a really good year as well. Players of that ilk, your match winners. But I just think Liam Rossini, having got this team on the cusp of the playoffs, let's not forget they could have got in there on the final day had results gone differently. So it wasn't as if they missed out by a million miles. So I just think it's very much, even though the owner insists it's nothing to do with necessarily the results and the league position, it feels like very much a knee-jerk reaction to have done it within 3 days of the season coming to a close, which all indications do suggest it's because they missed out on the playoffs, though he says otherwise. And I just think, like I've said, it is one of those where I just think this could be a decision that potentially comes back to bite Hull, because Liam Rossini, I personally think he's a really good manager. And as well as that, I think he's a really good bloke as well. He comes across as a very down-to-earth sort of character. There's nothing really to dislike about him. He speaks well, very polite, things like that. And I don't think he'll be out of work for very long at all. So I do hope somebody snaps him up soon. I've already seen a few Birmingham fans saying that they hope they can get him if Tony Mowbray can't return for their season in League One next year. But we shall see what happens with Liam Rossini. But for Hull, a few names being bandied about already. Some of them, obviously, you take with a pinch of salt as far as the bookies' lists are concerned. But I just think it's a really sort of knee-jerk reaction from the Hull owner to do it, certainly so soon after the season's come to a close, and what, 7 months after giving him, 6 months even after giving him a new 3-year contract. So I don't agree with it. I don't think it sits particularly well. And when the news broke on Tuesday afternoon, you messaged me literally the second I had just started seeing it on Twitter. And a lot of the Hull City fans were like, this can't be true. There's no way this can be true. So it's quite clear the Hull fans weren't wanting it. They weren't pushing for it, not by any stretch of the imagination. So I'd certainly say the owner's got to get this new decision right. He's got to bring the right man in. I suppose on the plus side is he's done it long before pre-season begins. So the new man, if he gets him in fairly quickly, he's going to have time to sort of get to know his surroundings before the players come back for pre-season. But I don't know. I just think it could be a decision that does come back to bite Hull on the backside. But having said that, they will have funds available again, you would think, to maybe chuck some money at it. Obviously, we don't know what they'll do. The transfer window doesn't open for another 5 weeks, so that will dictate a lot. But personally, the position doesn't sit well with me. I think it's a big mistake.
Yeah, ultimately the pressure's going to be on for Ilijai, who has done a lot right, I think it's worth saying. You know, the investment he's put into the infrastructure, he's put a lot of time and effort into fan engagement as well, which was at an all-time low, really, under the Allen family. And looking at attendances, if nothing else, is a good gauge for how much more engaged this Hull City fan base is with the club, and that he is a huge part of that. However, it does feel like he has a streak of erratic decision making, not just in terms of the management, but also I think you look at the transfer window, it felt like they were going for the Harlem Globetrotters approach when you look at the sort of the recruitment that they made in January, you know, signing Carvalho, Zaruri, great signings on paper, but when you've already got Tufan, Delap, Philogene, who are all sort of, in terms of the wide players, you've got Zaruri, likes to play on the left. Philogene was having a great season playing on the left. Fabio Carvalho is a number 10 or plays from the left. It wasn't the most balanced recruitment is what I'm trying to say. And would that money have been better spent on another central midfielder or on a centre-back? Not as sexy, but I feel like the better run clubs or the more data-driven clubs or the smarter recruitment teams might have pointed that out. But it feels like Ajun is one for the headline, one for the stars, and you know he's got a media background. He's known as the Simon Cowell of Turkey. So maybe I just feel like that sort of image is what he's trying to transcend on Hull City a little bit.
Yeah.
That's great and that's good for the fans and it's exciting, but it doesn't always lead to success on the pitch.
Yeah, in a roundabout way, what you're trying to say is trying to play career mode in real life. That's kind of what he wants. He wants all the glitz and the glamour at the top end of the pitch, kind of forgetting about perhaps the structure and the balance of the team. And like you said there, Carvalho was a Rory. Ryan Giles was another big name after what he did at Middlesbrough last year. Mm. Philogene last summer. If you're a fan of any club signing those players, you're going to be excited. You've got every right to be. But you just need to work out that balance a little bit more. And obviously they lost Liam Delap to injury for quite a while. That was a big blow. They obviously brought in Noah Ohio in January. He's done okay. He's chipped in a few goals, not many, but did okay. Didn't feel like they really got a substantial replacement for Delap in that period. And I know they did try and get one, but it didn't quite come off for a big name striker.
They did. Not sure how effective that was.
Yeah, it's not obviously not his strongest position, but Carvalho, to his credit, came and did a good job. I think he ended up with 9 goals. That was quite a healthy return. Philogene obviously had a good individual year. Tufan did well. So there were some good individual performances within there. But like you say, not necessarily the overall balance of the team. But having said that, Jacob Greaves, of course, had an excellent season and got in the official championship team of the season. So there were some good individual showings within that whole team this season. And overall, I think most Hull fans, even though obviously there was a lot of pressure, say, from the outside following the end of the January window, sort of saying, look at them signs they've made. They're going to be in trouble financially if they don't get in the playoffs. Hull were never realistically expected to get in the top six this season. If they'd achieved that, whether they'd gone and got promoted or not, they would have been ahead of schedule. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned earlier on about the position that Liam Rissini inherited the club in when he came in, when they were down in 21st place. So he's done well to make up such tremendous strides in such a short space of time. So that's why, for me, it just doesn't quite sit right. And God knows how many managerial exits we've reacted to this season. I've lost count. I dread to think how many it's been. This one probably does rank as one of the more dubious of the lot, considering the progress that Hull made from where they were when the manager came in. But like I've said, I don't think Liam Rissini will be out of work for long. He's a good manager. He's proven that. There's something there with him that I think can really take him far in the game. And good luck to him, because I do think he'll get snapped up soon, whether it be sort of this summer, few months into next season when someone's in need of fresh blood. Who knows? We'll see. But personally, like I've said a couple of times already, I think this is a decision that Hull City could end up regretting. Could be wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who they plump for next. Steve Cooper, Danny Rill, Marty Cifuentes and Tim Walter, ex-Hamburg boss. The early front runners and names being mentioned. Sunderland, it'd be very interesting to see if they are on the Will Still train now that he's available, or whether they in turn could be interested in Liam Rissini. I think he's certainly the man for a project, and working with young players, he's clearly got a talent.
Fits the bill.
He does, absolutely. Just right, and the main purpose of this podcast, George, is to preview the playoffs. They are coming this Sunday, 12 o'clock, Leeds United away at Norwich City, first and foremost, sixth host third, and then West Brom at home to Southampton directly after that. So an afternoon on the settee, if you're not directly involved in those games, is a must. And we're going to start at Carrow Road, George, and preview these games, break down, tactically the game and where the games could be won and lost. So let's start with Norwich City and the way they come into this game. They obviously ended the season with defeat at Birmingham, and they have got a few injuries in the squad. Ashley Barnes is out for the season. Interesting for me that Marcelino Nunez pushed forward in this in the team at Birmingham, and he brought Sorensen into the midfield to partner Kenny McLean. So you got Sarr off the right, Sainz off the left, and then you got Nunez playing number 10. I personally don't think that's the best balance for Norwich City. I think they would be a better side with John Rowe, who's obviously just coming back from a long-term injury, or even Fasnacht in on the right-hand side, put Sarr into the number 10 position and then play Nunez deeper alongside McLean, where he's generally played. But we know Norwich City's strengths are their home form. They haven't lost at Carrow Road since November. November the 5th, actually, I was there. It was Blackburn Rovers that beat them, actually. And I expected that to be the end of David Wagner's reign as Norwich City boss, but it wasn't the case. And they've been on an extraordinary run since. They ended the season with 49 points from 23 matches, the fourth best record in the division. And they do have match winners in the squad with Sarah and Josh Sargent, who on their day are as you know, elite championship players, if not ready for the Premier League. So Norwich coming in decent form, but you do feel like they're going to need a lead to take back to Elland Road.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would presume that. And this is going to be a really, really interesting game, I think, because, and we'll talk about the other game a little later on between West Bromwich Albion and Southampton. And I've actually been thinking about this to myself today, in the sense that I think whereas Southampton and West Brom, their tie could be more of a tactical battle because of the way Carlos Corberan is.
Agreed.
I think this one could be decided more on individual talent moments and perhaps just extraordinary goals or whatever. Because I look at Norwich.
I completely agree with you.
I look at Norwich and, to be quite honest, they're a bit like Hull City in the sense we didn't expect them to be knocking on this end of the table this season. And they've done really, really well, like you quite rightly mentioned. We thought it was going to be curtains for David Wagner sort of 3 or 4 months into the season. Remarkable turnaround. But you look at the quality that Norwich have shown in the last few months. Gabriel Sarr has been absolutely extraordinary again. Josh Sargent has proven just how key he is and how much they missed him when he was out injured with that ankle injury. Borja Sainz has come on in leaps and bounds. John Rowe had a fantastic start to the season, and then obviously injury hindered his progress a little bit. The defensive line's been pretty solid and structured. Angus Gunn's got better in goal. So there is really good quality within this Norwich City team. And I think they will make it very, very difficult for Leeds at Carrow Road on Sunday. Like you've quite rightly mentioned, the home form's been absolutely exceptional. They've not lost at home this calendar year in League or Cup. And of course, to make things a little more interesting, which it depends how you sort of look at stats and you look at the history of these games, Leeds, of course, struggle in the playoffs for whatever reason. They've got a habit of falling at this hurdle. So I think Norwich will certainly fancy their chances. I think they are the underdogs, as they quite rightly are, having finished sixth in the table. They will sort of have a sense of less pressure on their shoulders than Leeds United will. But I think if Norwich can get a lead in this first leg to take back to Elland Road, obviously, it cranks the pressure up on Leeds that little bit. We saw, obviously, the last time Leeds were in this position when they played Derby County back in 2019 in the playoffs, that anything can happen. And obviously, Leeds were leading that game 2-0 on aggregate that tie, having won the first leg at Pride Park. So it just goes to show that anything's possible. They're very, very difficult games to predict. Myself and you know better than anybody that the playoffs can stir up anything after what happened with Sheffield Wednesday last year in League One. So it's going to be really interesting, but I do think, and I go back to my original point, I think this tie could be decided more on the flashes of quality and the talent available to both teams, whereas the West Brom-Southampton game, though both teams are blessed with really, really good players, I think it could be more of a tactical battle between the two managers. I think so, yeah, because Carlos Corberan, and I mean, we're going to talk about the West Brom game more in depth, but just sort of to tie in with this segment, Carlos Corberan is probably the most flexible manager in the league when it comes to his tactical nous. And he can sort of flex his muscles in certain situations. And we've seen different styles from West Brom throughout the season, whereas Leeds are a bit more sort of chuck everything at it with the attacking flair that they've got. Norwich, they might be a little bit more conservative than Leeds, but we know from the likes of Gabriel Sarr, Josh Sargent and Borja Sainz, who I've been really impressed with this season, his first year in English football, there's players there that can make things happen. So honestly, I think this tie could go either way. But the first leg, like you said, it probably does feel a little bit more key for Norwich than it does for Leeds getting a lead into that second leg.
Yeah, for Norwich, obviously the weakness, you point to the away form, only 24 points from 23 games, which is, I think, was the 19th best record. So it does feel like they'll need something to take back to West Yorkshire. How much do you think recent form plays into this game, I suppose, both for both teams? Because Norwich are in probably the best form of the four, quite weirdly, despite losing on final day.
Again, I think it's a really difficult question to answer because...
Well, answer
it. You sort of sense it's like a different mini competition now, isn't it? But lasting form, confidence, things like that are all going to be taken into account when preparing for games like this. And when you actually look at the last six games of the four teams that are going to contest these playoff places, Leeds United have got the worst record of the lot over the last six games. They've taken 4 points out of 18, whereas Norwich and Southampton, not much better, have taken 9 out of 18. West Brom have got 7. So none of the four are in what you could call sparkling form. None of them have been playing their best stuff recently, but the playoffs, there's a different meaning to it. The prize is much greater. The mindset surely changes. So I honestly think it kind of matters for some of it, but it doesn't for a little bit of other bit. It's weird. There's no right or wrong answer, I don't think. But I'm sticking with what you said, that I think the first leg is key for Norwich because they've got that home advantage. And interestingly enough, looking back at the stats, the only two playoff campaigns Norwich have had, the first legs they've had at home, they've won 3-1. So they seem to get a little advantage when they're playing at home in the playoffs. Obviously, the last time they were in these playoffs, they went and won the playoffs back in 2015 when they beat Middlesbrough at Wembley.
They beat Middlesbrough.
Beat Ipswich in the semi-finals. So who knows? History can play its part. Some teams have good records in the playoffs, others don't. And unfortunately for Leeds, they're one of those that don't. But does past history have a real bearing on it? I'm not so sure. It's a new season. It's a new kettle of fish. But I think, being brutally honest, if Leeds are at their very best, playing the sort of way they did between January and the March international break, they shouldn't fear Norwich. They did the double over them in the regular season. They beat them 3-2 away from home, coming from 2-0 down. They beat them at Elland Road 1-0 not all that long ago. So they've had the edge over them this season. The playoffs very different. David Wagner, Daniel Farke, both very experienced managers. They know what it takes to get out of this league. David Wagner's done it through the playoffs, of course, with Huddersfield all them years ago. So it could go either way, but I do think Leeds will be considered the favourites because of the abundance of quality they've got. But you wouldn't write Norwich off at your peril. Not a chance, because they can hurt you. They've got players to do it. Likes of Gabriel Sara, Boa Sainz, Nunes, Fashnat. Players like that, they are capable of conjuring something up in the blink of an eye. So should be an interesting tie, this one. Looking forward to it. But I wouldn't say there's a clear favourite on current form. But if Leeds are at it, they've got to be considered the favourites in that sense.
Leeds obviously ended the season in very poor form, as you've said, and the defensive solidity, which was the backbone of their fantastic run and start to the calendar year in particular, has been completely eroded. They've won two of their last eight games. They've got one clean sheet in that time. They've conceded 16 of their 43 goals this season in their last eight games. That's 40% of their season total in eight matches, which is obviously highly disproportionate percentage-wise. That's a big concern for them, and how quickly can they shake out of the recent run? It's very difficult to say. They ended the season with all of their attackers out of form as well. Routier's gone from, I think it's 10 goal involvements in 9 matches to none in 8 since he had surgery. Crescenzi of Somerville, albeit named Championship Player of the Year, his goal involvements in 2024 have significantly dropped off as well. But they do have quality in the squad. But when you're coming into the playoffs with both ends of the pitch not quite firing, that's a big concern. There's also been a bit of a conundrum in midfield on what the best balance is. You've got Grew, Evan Kamara was obviously the basis when they were going through their best run. They've then tried Archie Gray in there with Grew, Evan, and Kamara was on the bench for a little bit. Connor Roberts went to right back. Do you put Gray back at right back? Do you put him on the bench and stick with Grew, Evan, Kamara? I think Ampadu will stay in defence alongside Rodon, and because Stroik's still injured. It'll be interesting to see how they line up and how what Farker does, because It doesn't feel that, you know, there's a few different ways he could go, and they don't seem to be getting that consistency regardless of which he chooses.
Yeah, there is certainly a lot for him to ponder, isn't there? And I think another thing for Leeds as well is when you look back on their final two games of the regular season, obviously they lost to QPR. They were absolutely embarrassed by QPR. They were so bad that night. I watched that game and they were just off it completely. They were so poor.
Battered.
Didn't see the Southampton game. But when you're losing 2-1 at home to a team that obviously has fallen away in terms of an automatic charge, Leeds still had an outside chance on the final day, albeit very, very unlikely that Huddersfield were going to do them a favour down at Ipswich. But I think when you've gone into that and you've lost the game with the knowing that if Huddersfield had had beaten Ipswich and they'd passed up that opportunity, it just raises one or two alarm bells that they weren't sort of up and at it, firing all guns blazing. So it does make you wonder, is there going to be a bit of a hangover heading into the playoffs, the disappointment of not getting in the top two? We will find out. But there's more pressure on Leeds, I think, going into this than Norwich, without any shadow of a doubt, because of their respective league finishes. And that potentially could give Norwich a little injection and sort of say, as much as we want promotion, we weren't necessarily expected to achieve it at the beginning of the season. It's not necessarily what you could call a free hit, but it's certainly an opportunity that they probably weren't expecting, certainly with the start to the season that they made. Whereas Leeds, there's immense pressure on them to get promoted for all kinds of reasons. But I think Daniel Farker, like you've said there, he's got to consider how he's going to set this up. Personally, and I'm not a football manager, I'm not a tactician, I think I would go back to the formula of Archie Gray at right back. He was obviously absolutely splendid there for much of the season, did a really good job. There's obviously this conundrum in midfield, what do they do? But the attacking line, if Leeds want to win this, which they're going to want to, of course, I think you go with your kind of advanced attacking three of maybe Nonto, Somerville, Routaire, play Bamford at the top end of the pitch, or Joel Perreault, or Dan James comes in and features
Bamford and Dan James miss the last day of the season for injury. I think Farker will do his pre-match press conference tomorrow, I'd expect. So
will be tomorrow,
it'll be
Friday, won't
if
it?
Those two are available.
I think, but for a game of this ilk, maybe, because there wasn't an awful lot of, well, not necessarily a lot of love, but Perreault sort of lost his place, didn't he, to Bamford towards the end of the season. I know Perreault scored on the final day against Southampton, but Bamford did sort of nudge ahead of him in the pecking order when both were fit and available. So if Bamford is fit, does he recall him? Bamford obviously has got that little bit more experience in these situations, but Perreault, fabulous player, he's got a terrific record at his level in the last couple of seasons. Will be very, very interesting to see what he does. But for me, the biggest thing, as much as Conor Roberts is a really good right back, I do think you've got to nudge Archie Gray back into that position to help stifle that midfield a little bit more, which they did for much of the season. Gray has been excellent wherever he's played, to be fair to him. And obviously, Rodon and Ampadu, they were excellent for the most part at centre-half. But in the last few weeks, obviously, Leeds have capitulated defensively, conceding, what was it, 9 goals in their last 3 games. It was a really, really poor record, sort of how good they'd been defensively. So a lot for Farker to ponder. But I do stick to my original statement that I think this will all be decided over the course of the two legs on the individual quality on show, because both teams have got match winners within their ranks. Leeds more so, but Norwich, Gabriel Sara, I mean, in particular, he is a player to watch. Had a fabulous season. And to be fair, he'd probably walk into Leeds' 11, which is how good he is. So a lot to get your teeth into ahead of this one. But I think of the two games, over the two ties, I think this could be a little bit more of the exciting one, shall we say, with a bit more drama. Could be wrong, but we'll see.
I think it'll be quite a cagey first leg, to be honest, because I think Leeds, Farker will think back to basics. If we get out with a draw, 1-1, a 0-0, quite happy. Whereas I think Norwich need to get an advantage to go back to Elland Road. So I think Leeds would be happier to stifle the game, to be honest, on Sunday, because obviously, at the best, they've been defensively solid, and maybe a clean sheet will just help and just reinforce that to go back to Elland Road with.
Yeah, quite possibly. But how many times have we seen in the past where teams have had that mindset playing away in the first leg, and we think if we keep it tight, keep it cagey, get them back to our place, we'll get the job done with the backing of our home crowd and the energy that creates. It's certainly an understandable ploy, but it carries risks. If it backfires, it's going to be one where your manager, your players have got to face the brunt of the criticism. I just think both games, both teams, you've got to go out there with the ambition of winning it. But like you say, Leeds, the onus is more on Norwich on Sunday than it is for Leeds, whereas next Thursday night, or Friday night, whenever it is, I think it's, is it Thursday, Norwich and Leeds first? I think it's Thursday, isn't
yes,
it?
And then West Brom's yeah. Friday.
So I think, obviously, both teams will be looking at it and sort of thinking, if we can win our respective home leg, we're maybe halfway there, and let's see how the scores tot up at the end. But like I say, I think this has got to be certainly got the ingredients to be a really exciting two-legged tie. This, I think there'll be goals over the course of the 180 minutes and possibly beyond. And bring it on, that's what I say. Like you say, there's nothing better than the second legs of these games under the lights. The legends that will no doubt be Daniel Mann and Gary Weaver on the commentary for Sky. There's just something special about them. If it lives up to the billing of the Nottingham Forest Sheffield United second leg 2 years ago, we're in for a treat, because I still think that's one of the best I've ever seen.
West Brom hosts Southampton directly after that game. Start with the Baggies. 2 wins in 8. Not the greatest run to come in. However, I do think there is some mitigation with some of those results. The Leicester game, for example, there's no way they should have lost. Early red card against Sunderland gives them a little bit of an excuse with that, playing with 10 men. The Sheffield Wednesday result, probably the most concerning, where they were just overruled by the atmosphere and the occasion, I think, with that one, to be honest. And Sheffield Wednesday just felt like they wanted that and needed that result a little bit more. How much of this run of 2 wins in 8 is a concern for you as far as West Brom go?
It is a concern. There's no doubt about it. It is a concern because they've been very, very good in recent weeks. They were on an unbeaten run of, I think, 9 or 10 games between mid-February and the 13th of April when they lost to Sunderland. So it is 3 defeats in the last 4 games. But ultimately, most importantly, they did end the season with a good victory, albeit against the most out-of-form team in the league who can't even put the ball in the net at the minute. But I think the thing for West Brom is, like I said earlier on, Carlos Corberan team, you don't quite know what you're going to get, but that's not in a bad way. It's in a good way, in the sense that he can mix things up to give West Brom the best possible chance. And we all know West Brom, by and large, have been excellent at home under Carlos Corberan ever since he walked through the door. And they are, generally speaking, very hard to score against at the Hawthorns. The clean sheet tally's off the scale under Carlos Corberan at home. And obviously, his tactical ability is second to none in this league. It's absolutely spot on. But, of course, he's playing a very good team here. Southampton, who have already beaten West Brom twice this season, including the Hawthorns 3 months ago, when they won 2-0 on a Friday night. Ryan Fraser and David Brooks with the goals that evening. Southampton did play well that evening, I must say. They were much better than what they were at Bristol City 3 or 4 days earlier. I remember Russell Martin saying it was like a basketball match at Ashton Gate, and he didn't like that, which is hardly surprising considering Southampton's style of play. But I think West Brom, similarly to Norwich, they'll be of the mindset that if we can win this first leg and take a lead to St Mary's, we've got a chance, because I think the last thing Southampton will want to face is having the prospect of lost that first leg, West Brom rock up at St Mary's next Friday night in an ultra-low block, making it incredibly difficult. Southampton will move the ball around and West Brom will just follow every single move. And Carlos Corberan, like I've kept saying, he is a tactical masterman at this level. He knows how to win games at this level by any means necessary. So I think, realistically speaking, I think it's crucial Southampton have a lead to take into this second leg, because, like I say, West Brom, they'll be set up to a tee by Corberan for the second leg if they're leading the tie. But at the same time, West Brom probably got lesser of attacking threat than Southampton have when everybody's at their best. But, of course, West Brom, very experienced team. The likes of Jed Wallace, John Swift, they've done good jobs this season. Brandon Thomas Asante's had a good year as well. They've got players who can hurt you. But I would argue Southampton have got a far better level of quality than West Brom. But, like I've said throughout this podcast, tactically, I think West Brom have really got the best manager of the four contesting these playoffs to set up for this. And of course, Carlos Corberan, although he didn't go all the way with Huddersfield a few years ago, he got them very close, and they were arguably even bigger underdogs then than what West Brom are now, even though that Huddersfield side finished third that year. So I think West Brom have got the perfect manager for this. It's just a case, can they execute the game plan to perfection? And of course, they've got to deal with the attacking threat that Southampton have. Adam Armstrong, Ryan Fraser, the list goes on. Will Smallbone, there's so much talent in that Saints team. But we shall see, because like I say, Corberan, one of the best tacticians in the league, if not the best.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that if you wanted one of the managers in the Championship to set up an individual game plan, I think Carlos Corberan would be the person. He's probably the best person at setting up those systems and those shapes, as I say. West Brom excellent at set pieces as well. And Corberan's experience in the playoffs with Huddersfield, albeit not winning in the final, but a very tight, low-margin win over Luton Town in those two legs, which got them to Wembley. And I do think that could be a major advantage for West Brom. Southampton knew they were in the playoffs for a while after the defeat to Cardiff. That pretty much confirmed that they were going to be playing in the playoffs. But the reaction's been quite poor. Three defeats in a row to end the season. Thumped truly at Leicester. And then, of course, finishing the season with a defeat against Stoke City as well.
But beat Leeds, don't forget.
But then beat Leeds, of course. I said three defeats in a row, and I meant three defeats in four.
Yep.
But then beat Leeds on the final day. How much do you think that Leeds United result masks? Does it mask what went before? Or it's really hard because it was basically a game between two sides that got very little to play for. And does it give them a bit of psychology going into the playoffs? Is it a good reaction? I don't know how much weight to put behind that result.
Well, I don't think ever going to Elland Road and winning is going to do your confidence any harm. It's been one of the hardest grounds to visit in the league this season. Only themselves and Blackburn recorded victories there. So they've got to take some form of confidence from it, no doubt about it. And when you've been on a bit of a slump, having lost at home to Stoke, obviously thumped by Leicester, as you quite rightly said, just to rejuvenate a little bit of confidence, it's not going to do any harm. So a good result at Leeds, and it was one that they deserved. Like I've said, I think Southampton, in a similar way to Leeds against Norwich, if they're up and at it and bring their A game, their star attackers are on form, their defence is solid, which it can be, then I think Southampton will fancy their chances. I think a lot of people will, generally speaking, view these playoff semi-finals and be more inclined to think we're going to have a Leeds versus Southampton final with the third and fourth best teams progressing. But you can never say never. And like I said, I think the key for Southampton possibly will be taking a lead or at least a draw into that second leg, because they could be ultra frustrated by West Brom in that second leg if the Baggies take a lead. So in answer to your question about the end of season form, it was disappointing. It was underwhelming because there was obviously that run that they had of three wins in a week when they beat Watford, Coventry and Preston.
That first half really got you thinking.
It was superb.
A lot of people in. Yeah. That was one of the best.
It did.
Individual team performances I've seen for a half of football.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree. And obviously there is the caveat, again, that Preston have been really, really poor of late. You can't deny that. But you can only play what's in front of you. And that night, Southampton were very, very good, I must admit. The first half, I watched it and I thought, crikey, they could be 5 or 6 nil up here. They're absolutely just cutting through them at will. It was so sort of polished, the way they were playing. It was really crisp and quick. And then obviously the defeat at Cardiff came along and the bottom fell out of it, thumped at Leicester, who, again, Leicester were very good that night, it must be said. So they got the win at Leeds, which was a big bonus. And that will have injected some confidence. So I think, realistically, Southampton will... Not necessarily saying going into it on a massive high, but they'll go into it in a better mood than what they would have done had they not beaten Leeds, say, for example, and be going in four without a win. So we shall see. It's going to be another interesting tie, but whereas I think the Leeds-Norwich tie will be quite open, quite expansive, and there'll be goals, I think this one could be a little bit more cagey, partly because of Corberan's tactical flexibility. But both of them, on paper, should be really interesting ties. Looking forward to them. Like you said, that the second leg's just that little bit more spicy than the first. And it should be interesting next week. So should be an interesting one. But kind of feel that the winner of the first leg could get to Wembley in this one. I think that could settle it. Could be wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah, the big goal threats, obviously, that Southampton have got are Adams and Armstrong. Adams ending the season in particular in good form as well. They've got strength in depth from the bench. You feel like whatever Martin doesn't go with, whoever doesn't make the starting 11, could have a big say from the substitute bench. It's really interesting, actually, that Southampton went and completely diverted for the first time this season, shape-wise at Leeds, and went 3-4-3 when they've obviously very, very settled in the 4-3-3 shape that we're used to seeing with Downs and two number eights and Armstrong off the right or left. And it very interestingly as well, West Brom played a back three not that too long ago away at Leicester in what was a big game. Yekuslu playing into the back three in that match, which is very interesting because we could end up with two teams that predominantly play 4-2-3-1 and 4-3-3 all season both go with a back three, which would be very odd. In terms of previous records, it's interesting to note that Russell Martin has done the double over Carlos Corberan in the last two seasons, both with Swansea and then Southampton against West Brom as well. I don't know if that comes into it, but yeah, I find tactically this a really interesting matchup. I'll be intrigued to see who West Brom go with in the forward areas. I feel like John Swift might miss out. Does he go with Thomas Asante down the middle, which he's done in some games, or is he going to go for Jed Wallace, who is obviously not a natural striker, but has been used there for his pressing energy and for his ability to on the ball. You've then got, obviously, Mikey Johnson, you expect on one wing, maybe Dean Garner in the 10, and maybe Tom Fellows on the right, or maybe he'll go for three in midfield with Envia, Yakuslu and Mowat, and maybe Fellows misses out and Dean Garner goes on the right-hand side. Maybe it's Wallace at 10 with Asante up front. So he's got options. It'll be really interesting to see what he goes with shape-wise and what Southampton do as well, which is what I think makes this a really tactically interesting battle.
Well, I think, like I said, it's got the potential to be a really entertaining tie. I think it could be quite open. I think there could be goals. But I think because of the quality they've got and the capability they've got if they bring their A game and not the form that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, I do fancy Leeds. I think they've got it in them. And I think over the course of the season, they do deserve it because they have, obviously, they pushed Ipswich almost every step of the way right till the very end. So I do think Leeds will come through that two-legged tie, not necessarily by winning both legs, but I do think they'll have enough to get through it. So from the first semi-final, I'm going to go for Leeds to progress to Wembley.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. I do think Leeds have got more quality than Norwich. I think Norwich would need to go in with one or two goals, I think, from Carrow Road, albeit, you know, Leeds have got a wobble in them. We don't, you know, and this particularly one in the playoffs, the Derby game springs right to mind where they were 2-0 up from the first leg and then blew it at in one of the most brilliant games I've seen from a neutral just watching from the TV. That was absolutely stunning. But I think Leeds will be too strong. I think they've got more quality and depth, and I think they've got the ability, if they can sort the defence out, they've got the ability to frustrate Norwich and then use their quality in attack to win the game. So I'm agreeing with you with Leeds to beat Norwich. For the second leg, I think West Brom are going to beat Southampton and get to Wembley. I fancy West Brom to stifle and frustrate. I could see them winning 1-2-0 at the Hawthorns, maybe a set-piece goal, and really frustrating them out of possession. And we've bigged up Corberan a lot, and I think they might just get that the noses in front of the Hawthorns and then be able to get a draw at St Mary's and really frustrate them. So for me, I'm going for Leeds United versus West Brom to be the playoff final.
Well, it's a rarity, but we're going to have to agree on something. It doesn't happen very often. And to be fair, I think after the way we've both bigged up Carlos Corberan's tactical ability, it would be a bit of a disservice to him to say Southampton then reach the final, wouldn't it? So I am going to agree with you and go for West Brom to progress, and for the reasons I've outlined, purely because I think if West Brom take a lead into that second leg from Sunday, I do think Corberan's got the tactical nous to really stifle Southampton and set up and frustrate them. I don't think there is a better manager at this level anyway that is capable of doing that. And let's not forget, we're banging on about Carlos Corberan here, and you've reeled off some of the names and the prospects, the way West Brom could line up. West Brom have still got a very good team. They were in the playoffs for the bulk of the season. It's not as if they made a late dart for it. They were there from sort of what, October time?
There's a really good graphic that Sky Sports have put out, actually, and it shows all the teams going up and down. West Brom, it's literally a straight line for about 70% of the season in fifth.
and they only just finished in fifth, let's not forget. It looked as though Norwich were going to pick them to it and they would have finished in sixth. And to be honest, I think Leeds, if it had been Leeds-West Brom, that would have been even more interesting with Corbrand's Leeds connections. Mm. But obviously, they did get fifth on the final day with Norwich losing at Birmingham. So I think I will go for West Brom with you. Leeds-West Brom final. I think that would be an interesting game, that. I really do, obviously. Whole different kettle of fish with the occasion, the venue, everything else like that. So it will be really, really interesting to see. But as far as the semi-finals are concerned, we'll think about the final nearer the time, whoever does get there. But I think I'm going to go for West Brom as well. But the first leg does feel key. I will stress that. If Southampton, say, win that first leg, then maybe my opinion will swing somewhat. But we shall see. It's the playoffs. Anything can happen. We know how bonkers it can be. all I say is bring it on. It could be interesting this year. I don't think there is a clear favourite this time around. I really, really don't.
I think the form makes it interesting of the form.
It does.
That you probably
without
say,
a doubt.
In terms of form, Leeds are the most out of form and Norwich are the most in form. And obviously that's the reverse way of the playoffs. Yeah, did you really think I wasn't going to make you pick a winner here and now?
Oh, of course not. You love to put us on the spot. It's what you do. It's what you do best.
So we both think it's going to be a West Brom Leeds final. We'll obviously be previewing the final in great depth, and you might revise your predictions after what we see in the semi-finals. But who would you, if you're putting £5 on the winner of the Championship playoffs right here and now, who are you betting on?
It just seems so obvious and the easy choice to go with Leeds because, oh, they finished they're the best team of the four in there.
I've got a few numbers actually that make for interesting reading, and there seems to be some sort of myth that finishing third is bad for your prospects of getting promoted. But actually, if you looking at some of the recent finishers and teams have got promoted, so in this century, 11 times third place has been promoted, 4 times fourth, and 6 times fifth place, and only 3 times has the sixth place team finished and got promoted. And the last team to finish sixth and win the playoffs was...
Right. I could be wrong, but I'm going to hazard a guess at Blackpool in 2010.
Woohoo! He's got it as well. First try. I thought I was going to have to give you a clue. Well played.
Quite Charlie Adam final.
Finishing third doesn't always work, and as I say, 11 times for third, 6 times for fifth place, and then fourth and is 4 times, and 3 times sixth place has gone up. So 9 times out of 10, or 8 times out of 10, whatever, third place does tend to get over the line.
Yeah, and just to back that statistic up a little bit further, it's one that I found yesterday while sorting today's content out for the Twitter page. Is that since the EFL restructuring 2004-05, the team that has finished third has won the playoffs 9 times out of the 19 playoffs we've had as the Championship format. So nearly a 50% ratio of the team finishing third getting the job done. And there is obviously a lot of arguments with a lot of people to suggest that the three best teams should go up. And to be fair, it is a worthy argument.
No.
But it makes the playoffs what it's all about. And it obviously adds that extra spice to it. But I don't think if Leeds do go on and get up, I don't think anybody can have any particular complaints because they have been very good this season. There's no denying that. But of course, the other three teams have earned the right to have a go. They're not going to roll over for Leeds United. So it's going to be really interesting. But I do honestly think with the form of the four of them, I don't think there is necessarily a clear favourite. Whereas last year, I think we all kind of felt maybe it is just a straight fight between Luton and Middlesbrough.
You got it wrong. I was also going to bring it up last year we did this.
I got it wrong.
I was bang on. I said that Coventry would beat Middlesbrough, and they did. And I said Luton would win as well. Who did Luton beat? Why is that not coming
Sunderland.
To my mind? Oh, Sunderland, of course they did. And that happened. And then Luton beat Coventry at Wembley. So I called it perfectly in terms of the legs and the bracket last year. And you didn't think Coventry would get there. I think you did go. Did you go for Luton in the end still? I think you still went for Luton.
I can't remember, being honest. But obviously with that final last year, we had, what did we have? We had third versus fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And the year before we had third versus fourth with Huddersfield and Forest. So generally speaking, the sixth place side, certainly in recent years, has struggled to get to the final. But it's the playoffs. Anything is capable
of happening.
What are you going for? I think I'm going to have to stick to my guns and go with Leeds. I do, because I just genuinely think if they bring their very, very best form to the table, they are capable of getting the job done because of the talent they've got. We've seen countless signs this year. Crescencio Somerville's obviously had the season of his life. Jorginho Rutter's had a very good season, albeit tailed off in recent weeks. Dan James has had a good year. Willie Nonto has had a good year. Then you look at the back line of Rodon and Padu. They're as good as any centre-half partnership in the league on their day. So there is that element where you are sort of inclined to lean towards Leeds, but nothing's a given. I think each team has got an equal 25% opportunity. But if it boils down to perhaps a tactical battle, I really, really wouldn't underestimate West Bromwich Albion because I do think they've got the manager for it. So if you look at the bookies' odds, West Brom are considered one of the outsiders, albeit there's only four teams to pick from. If the odds are good, I would be tempted to put a little bit of money on West Brom because I wouldn't rule them out. Might not necessarily have the sexiest team on paper, but they've got a lot of experience, a lot of know-how, flashes of quality, but best of all, they've got a damn good manager. Really, really hard to call this one, I think, this year.
So you've backed Leeds to beat West Brom at Wembley, but you've basically just given us a load of reasons why West Brom will win.
Might win. Well, after all this, we know damn well that it'll be a Norwich versus Southampton final, obviously.
I think West Brom will win, and I'm backing them to win the playoffs because I just think they've got the best manager of the four teams. I think they've got the best tactician and the person who is best set up to create individual game plans that can frustrate and stifle the opposition. They're so comfortable out of possession, West Brom. And I think that when you put the weight, you know, you talked about the historic weight of results, and I know it doesn't make any logical sense, but Leeds United in the playoffs, they do just have that little bit of drama and not in a positive way. The Derby game just sticks right in my head a lot. And although I think they will get past Norwich and get to Wembley, I just think West Brom and Corberan, I think he can make it really difficult for them. And I would be so pleased if West Brom did get up because I think Corberan's done such a great job there with all the issues they've had off the field. And there was a now put to bed as well with the new takeover. So what a great story it would be if he managed to... he's kept the ship steady all season and they finally got a bit of backing maybe in the summer and they did get promoted. Obviously, the financial repercussions for Leeds United if they didn't get promoted would be... you know, would be terrible. But yeah, I think West Brom, for me, I think they are the value bet as well. Not that we do betting on this podcast, but I think they're around 5-1, which I think isn't proportionate to how odds on Leeds and Southampton seem to be. So yeah, I think West Brom to beat Leeds at Wembley for me is my early prediction.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I can certainly see where you're coming from, and I wouldn't sort of fully distance myself from backing West Brom at all. And the Baggies, when was the last time they reached the playoffs? Was it when they played Aston Villa in 2019? They lost it on penalties, didn't they, in the second leg? I remember it now, when Villa went and beat Derby after obviously beating Leeds. It was that year. Mm-hmm. So they've had a few years away from them, and Corberan obviously has been there a little bit more recently with Huddersfield, which was obviously a sort of a weaker playoff lineup that year, though you had Sheffield United, you had Forest, you had Luton. Seems to be a lot more sort of big financial clout this time with bigger names in these respective teams. So it's certainly probably the strongest playoff lineup we've had for a while in terms of the talent that's within these teams. But I still stick to my guns and say it's probably one of the hardest ones to call. And we seem to have focused a lot in sort of, because we've obviously tipped for a Leeds West Bromwich Albion final. You can't dismiss Southampton in all of this because we know what they're capable of as well. So I know obviously fans will listen to this at the four respective clubs and they will moan at us, they will whinge at us. You've got bias, this, that and the other. But of course, everybody's got to make a prediction of who they think will win it. We've made ours, but I'll be truthful. I do genuinely think that each team has got a 25% chance. A really difficult one to call this year.
And we are looking forward to drinking it all in. Thank you for listening to our playoff preview. Really looking forward to the games this week and can't wait to break them down as well on another pod very soon. Make sure you are subscribed to this feed wherever you get your podcast from to make sure you never miss an episode, and follow us on Twitter at ChampChatPod24. A massive thank you again to our sponsor, Cars Accepted, as well for their support this season. If you're looking to take car payments with no contract or monthly fees, check them out at cardsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Championship Chat podcast.